Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The statistics show that 70% of Americans lose sleep at least once a month because of their finances. They can't sleep. They toss and turn thinking of money problems. 40% of Americans say they're concerned that they're going to run out of money, that they will outlive their money. They'll have nothing one day. So we said, why don't we have a crash course in financial fitness? This is not about what stock or what bond to buy. You may have heard me say that on the radio. This is about putting all of your financial ideas together in a plan that will literally last you a lifetime. And it's also about maximizing your money by cutting the fees that you pay and the taxes that you pay and that kind of thing. So to kick it off, we have Kirk Cassidy, president of Senior Planning Advisors and Strategic Investment Advisors. He is a fiduciary. He'll tell you what that's about. If you don't already know, he holds a Series 65 securities license, a life insurance license. He is also heard on the weekends on the WWJ program Inside Retirement. Now, after you hear what he has to say, you can do everything that he tells you, and you can do it totally exactly the way he said, and you can still come out on the losing end if you don't have protection. Protection is, and I know a lot of people don't like this phrase, estate planning, protecting what you have. And that's where Mark Wander comes in. Mark is a Michigan attorney since 1992. His office is in Bloomfield Hills. He specializes in estate planning. He helps families plan for life and avoid conflicts, such as the guy that you never liked, who married your daughter, someday gets all of your money and gives it to his kids by a former marriage. Mark makes sure that doesn't happen. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to these guys. Don't take too much time because we want at least a half an hour for questions and answers at the end of it. Take it away. I'm going to take some notes.
Thanks, Murray. So, Murray, it sounds like you've been to my class.
Once.
So what's interesting, he threw some statistics out there, and what we know to be true is only 4% of you all, the consumer, the retirees, are writing a plan out for retirement. So that's one of the biggest mistakes we're seeing. We plan to go grocery shopping, we plan to go on vacations, but we don't plan our retirement. And you may think you have a plan because you have a broker's statement or a probability of success. Have you guys all seen the dial on your 401k statements that says you're going to be 88% successful? Well, there's a lot of flaws with the sort of old playbook as we refer to. So just a little background about myself and our firm. So Senior Planning Advisors was developed 20 years ago with this intention only, which is to help people prepare to and through retirement. We have about 700 clients that we help. Every client we work with, we build a full custom plan for each individual. I know a lot of advisors talk about planning, but we're talking about mapping out every single year, where are we taking income from, which accounts at what age, so to mitigate the chances of outliving our money and reduce taxation. So that may sound funny because I know a lot of advisors don't talk about taxes. Our average client is saving between $5,000 and $15,000 a year in taxes, which is extending the life of their money that many more years without taking greater risk in the stock market. I think the problem, and Mark, I think you would agree with this, is we're all conditioned. We're conditioned by the where we hear our news, where we get our information. I'll give the example. If you watch Fox News and you watch CNN tell the same story, I'm confident you're going to walk away with two different conclusions. Is that fair? Yeah. So what our industry has done a great job over throughout your life is to condition you to believe that there are certain simplified truths to planning and retirement. And it's not to make it easy for you, it's to make it easy for them. They don't want to spend the time to map out your plan for 30 years in a retirement. Finding the best sequences to take income from the right sources at the right age so that to mitigate that risk of outliving their money. And if you're not retired, you're going to have to trust me that once you do retire, you're going to have a different relationship with money. Your anxiety around investing your money is going to, it's going to change. You may have been disciplined in 2008, but the next time, if you're in retirement, if you don't have a written plan knowing where you're getting your guaranteed money from and how long your money's going to last, you're likely to overreact and panic and sell at the wrong time. And that's why study after study finds that the average retail investor performs about 3% historically, where the S&P 500 averages about 10%. So if we have a plan knowing where our money's coming from and we know it, we're never going to outlive it, then we're more likely to be a disciplined investor. So the goal is, hopefully, and we teach classes at the University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan University, Michigan State University, and Oakland University. Hopefully one day here. Is that possible, maybe? Thumbs up. Good. It's a 7-8 hour course where we're helping you to understand where the traps are. To help you understand, every 3.2 years, you're going to have an unexpected expense you didn't anticipate. To teach you why the 4% rule isn't going to work and how to build out an income plan. And how is Social Security taxed? And what tax rate we're going to be in our 70s? You notice I'm throwing a lot of things at you, right? None of it was about investing yet. None of it was about the stock or bond you chose. That's what you've done your whole life. That's the change. Now it's the distribution of your wealth. When do I take it? From which accounts? How much risk should I take? How much risk do I need? How do I factor for inflation? How do I factor for the $280,000 it's going to cost me in healthcare costs and retirement? Because that's what it is for a 65-year-old married couple. That's the average. How do you factor for the 50% chance that you're going to have a long-term care event in retirement at an average cost of $90,000 a year? There's all these traps, and the difference with retirement is there's no do-overs. You can't go back to work if you make a mistake. So you have to get it right. So that's what we're teaching in our classes. We're trying to teach you how to design a written plan. We're trying to teach you how to get away from those fees. You know, the average cost of a mutual fund is between 1.5% and 2.5%, depending on what study you believe. So once you retire, you don't need to use mutual funds. You can be using ETFs and individual stocks. Understanding not to use bond funds is a long-term solution, and where the traps are with bonds in a rising interest rate environment. There's just so many traps in today's retirement that people aren't prepared for, and that's what we're trying to teach. In addition, I'll add one more thing, and then I'll pass it to you, Mark. Did I go too long?
Yeah, it's time to go.
Okay. So Mark and I have been teaching classes, these classes, for years together, and I think that's one of the things he would accuse me of is maybe being a little long-winded.
You would think he gets paid by the hour.
I don't. So, by the way, the class costs to attend. It's a $29 class, and the money goes to charity. It's not a revenue source for our firm. It's to educate the public and so you all don't think it's a dinner seminar that you're going to be sold something. It's a 200-page textbook. There's a lot of content here. There's a lot of information. Our typical attendees are faculty and professors at the universities, a lot of executives from the big three, a lot of engineers, graduate level degrees. Highly educated people are attending our class. It moves fast. There's a lot of information. And we have found in retirement, the one thing that you got to adjust is getting your professionals working together, communicating. Your CPA, your financial advisor, and your attorney needs to be coordinated and working together to make sure everything you want to happen while you're alive and after you die is actually executed. Mark, with that?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's important when you're thinking about what estate planning attorney should you use. I'm not just going to say use me. What I'm going to say to you, these are the things that I
might say use you.
You what?
I might say use you.
You can say that, but here's what you need to look for. These are the things that are important. When you're meeting with that attorney, the first thing that you want to see happen is that you get educated. So when I do an initial meeting, I am spending the first part of that meeting educating the client on some of the estate planning issues that you need to know. It doesn't have to be overly technical. It could be at a real high level, But those things are going to help you make some decisions for you and your family. So that's number one, be educated. Number two is you need somebody that's going to listen. So many times over the years, I have had clients that have come to me and they've gone to another attorney, and I look at the documents and I ask the client questions, so I'm listening, and the documents don't match. And it may be things like one of the children may have a creditor situation or special needs where we don't want to just leave money directly to, or as Murray mentioned before, the son-in-law that there's a concern about. Those come out in that meeting when there's listening. You're not going to know as a client the things to just say to the lawyer. So if the lawyer's goal is just to get you in, get you out, next client come in, and just repeat that process, your estate plan is really not going to match your goals. So make sure that you feel that you're getting listened to when you're in that meeting. Next thing, obviously, is drafting. And you want to make sure that you have a lawyer that's, and this is probably the easiest part to find, frankly, is somebody that can draft documents. I am not going to be here and say to you, my documents are better than the next guy. Because they're not. There's things I like in mine. There's things I can look at in other lawyers. And we all steal certain things from each other. Those other two things that I mentioned to you are the most important part. And then the last thing is implementation. This is what Kirk was saying. I think it's extremely important that you make sure that your lawyer, that your financial advisor, that your CPA are all on the same page. Because if that doesn't happen, there is much less chance that your plan becomes implemented. And I can tell you stories of situations where there's been a death of a parent, and now I look at the plan drafted by another lawyer, or certainly where there's no plan, but we look at a plan that was drafted by another lawyer, and all those goals are never going to be implemented because they didn't coordinate, make sure that they have a team. It's one thing as you're kind of moving up that ladder and you're accumulating assets, that's great. As you kind of start coming up to that top of the hill and now you're looking at retirement and you're coming into that age and this transfer of wealth you know is going to happen, or there's that risk as you get older, we can't hide from it, of disability, you want to make sure that it's all coordinated. I need to know what he's doing. He needs to know what I'm doing, or it doesn't work. And I think that is really important and something that gets lost so many times, you know, frankly, by both sides, by the lawyers don't insist on it and the financial advisors don't insist on it, because it takes time to do that. Well, if my goal is to make sure that all my clients have their plan implemented, I don't have a choice but to make sure that happens.
Mark, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see. 70% of trust, like people come in with their trust, but 70% of the time they're never funded. Nothing's been done. So funding means, well, you explain.
Yeah. So when you hear the term funding, has anybody here done some estate planning? Does anybody have a trust if you've done that? So, there's a few of you. Something that should have happened at that meeting, typically at the end of the meeting or the end of the signing conference, or it may have happened at the next meeting, was there is a discussion of, all right, here's how the assets need to be titled. And sometimes, frankly, what the lawyers do, and they say, here's a letter, see you later. Well, really what should be happening is that they go over that letter with you, you sign a deed right there at the lawyer's office if a deed is appropriate. The letter gets sent to the financial advisor. The financial advisor and the lawyer have a conversation so that by the time that you go have that next meeting with the financial advisor, everything is already prepared for you to be able to sign to fund the trust. It has to happen. If you don't fund the trust, and the funding can be name on the account, it can be beneficiary designation of your life insurance or retirement, that all has to reflect your estate planning. Keep in mind that your estate planning can say everything goes to child A. But if your beneficiary designation says no, everything goes to child B, if the life insurance beneficiary designation says everything goes to B, A's not getting that life insurance. It doesn't matter what the will says. It doesn't matter what the trust says. So that's why that funding has to occur or the wrong things happen. Back to implementation.
Great foundation for planning, putting a financial plan together. When we're talking about estate plans, so many people I have seen have said, I have an estate plan, everything's great. Well, they may have had a wedding in the family. They may have had a divorce. They may have had a birth. I know somebody very well, it's not a family member though, who said, you know, my youngest child is not included in my estate plan. My pet is. That's why you have to go over these things every 6 months to a year, especially when there's some kind of life cycle change.
You know, that's a great point. I get asked many times, well, I've done some estate planning. How often should I review it? Let me tell you what I do in my office. So number one is back to that team approach. I know that if you're meeting regularly with someone that there's this team, if you meet with Kirk and Kirk is going to ask you some questions and you find it and he finds out something has happened in your life, you know, maybe it's something with a child or maybe it's something with creditor issues or whatever it is, he's going to call me and he's going to make sure that we all get together. So that's one kind of checks and balance to make sure you stay on top of things. The other part is I tell clients every 2 years, at least give me a call over the phone, have a review. I don't typically charge my clients for that phone call. Believe it or not, the lawyer not charging for the phone call, but I think it's so important. I want to see that implementation happen. Give me a call. Over that phone call, we can figure out, do we need to meet? Part of the documents, too, one of the documents that you have is something called a designation of patient advocate or a power of attorney for healthcare. Who makes medical decisions if you're unable? And I can talk about that more in a second. I have a page in that I call a reaffirmation. And all that means is re-sign this. My suggestion is every 2 years, re-sign it to say these are still my wishes. And I send out a letter to every one of my clients at the 2-year anniversary. It's time for you to re-sign that document, to sign the reaffirmation, and to call me at that time. If we don't hear from you, my assistant is going to hound you. We're going to have that conversation. So that's what I do in my office to make sure we stay on top of things.
Beautiful. One of the big financial stories over the past couple of months, has been the falling stock market. It drops a couple of hundred points a day, 600 points last week in one day, then it comes back 100. How many of your clients, Kirk, have called you and said, I'm worried?
Zero.
Now, I knew the answer to that question, but this is about planning. This is where it's at. Why is that?
Because they know they have guaranteed income sources. So there's so many traps in retirement, particularly as it comes to income. There's a term called sequence of return risk, and it's something our industry really isn't sharing with the public. We're all very familiar with it. I would write that down, sequence of return risk. And that risk is, once you retire, taking income, taking a distribution from an account that has volatility. So I want you to think about that. November 1st, you need to take an RMD. You needed to take income November 1st for lifestyle or because you were forced to. And the market pulled back. The NASDAQ was down almost 10%. Now, when you sold whatever you had to sell to get your income, you then sold, locking in your losses, and now you have fewer shares of whatever it is you owned, right? So it's not like when we were younger, we can just wait for it to come back, because now what's coming back is fewer shares. It won't come back the same way. I can show you how you can have an average 10% rate of return over a 20-year period. Take 5% out for income, and you'll run out of money in 17 years. Okay? It's called sequence of return risk, something we talk a lot about in our class. It's something you need to be familiar with. Don't fall for the simplified cookie-cutter plans. It needs to be custom. You need to take income early in retirement from accounts that don't have volatility. And then replenish that bucket that doesn't have volatility to take additional income as you get older. And that'll help reduce the chances of outliving your money significantly.
So to make it real simple, you have... No. I mean...
No, I get it.
I'm a news guy. We talk in
sound
one
bites.
Syllables.
You know, taught me that.
But you have... You know how much money you need to live.
Sure.
That money... You have created some kind of an income flow so that you'll have that money.
Forever.
It may come from what? An annuity?
It, depending on the client, their net worth, it could be... be careful, annuities. There are good, they're bad. Often there are good and bad people selling those annuities. But if you have a pension, just be clear, you own an annuity. That's what a pension is. So yes, that's from an annuity, from... It could be... A laddered muni bonds, depending on interest rate environments. There could be many variables. It could be as simple as just a stable value fund where there's no volatility, or a money market that I'm going to take income from in the first 5 years, and allow your asset allocation, segregate your assets, have your growth bucket for your growth and your income for your income. Don't try to do both from the same source.
Which is why when the market drops, people don't go crazy. Who you know, your clients, who have a plan such as this, because they know they don't need that money to live.
Correct.
Okay, so that is how you establish the foundation of a decent financial plan.
Well, there's no question. It helps you to be a more disciplined investor, too. It will impact your performance. See, people think stock picking and market timing is what drives performance, and it's not. The studies show 92% of what drives performance is asset allocation. Stock picking and market timing only represents 6% of performance.
And market timing often doesn't work.
No, you have to be right twice. It's really hard.
I know market timers that are no longer in business.
Day Trader Hall of Fame is empty, isn't it?
Because it works sometimes and it doesn't work other times. So you have to make sure that a lot of what you have is not going to be impacted by that kind of thing. Let's talk real quickly about fees. So many people say, my mutual fund is up 10% over the past year. Well, I didn't get 10% because the fees kind of deceive us.
They do.
Getting better. The industry is getting better on this, but we still are paying fees.
Yeah, we are, and there's tons of research on this, and that's one of the things that we share in the class is a lot of the resources of the different studies and research that's been done. The average cost of an actively managed mutual fund is between 1.5% and 2.5%, depending on which study you believe. The average cost to be in a 401k with mutual funds is over 3%. So we need to think about that. 3% a year, you're paying in fees in your 401k. You're 80 years old, and you have to start taking, you have your RMDs, your required minimum distributions, at 6% you have to take. That's 9% a year you're taking out of your retirement accounts. It's unsustainable. Fees is something you have to become familiar with, and we need to escape as quickly as we possibly can. And there's a lot of research out there to support that.
And, of course, you want to protect everything you have, and you want to grow it, Mark, and that's where you come in, and that's where you take a look at what people have, and you develop the plan that you were talking about before, an estate plan for people to make sure that they minimize their taxes and that they maximize any growth that they have and that their wishes are followed.
So, when you think of taxes from an estate planning standpoint, the tax that everyone always focused on is the estate tax. If we would have been having this conversation in the 90s, in the late 90s, the exemption from estate tax was like $600,000, meaning if at your death you had over $600,000, there was an estate tax, sometimes called a death tax, that would have to have been paid. That $600,000 slowly went up. It is now $11 million. Okay, $11 million, married couple times two, so $22 million. So I'm going to guess that most, if not all of you here, probably don't have an estate tax problem, but you still, in terms of estate tax, but there is a tax that's waiting for the next generation to pay, and that's the income tax. Your retirement account. What happens when you take money out of a retirement account? You have to pay income tax on it, right? Roth IRA, you don't, but if you have a Roth, you've already paid the tax on it. So as you start, Kirk mentioned RMDs, required minimum distributions. when you hit 70 and a half, you've probably heard you're required to start taking minimum distributions out of there. When you die and it goes to the next generation, they don't wait. They're not permitted to wait until 70 and a half. The year after your death, they're required to start taking minimum distributions. And the amount that they have to take out each year is that minimum distribution. It's based on their age. So you have a 30-year-old, there's an IRS chart, and it says your life expectancy is this long. Here's the percentage that you have to take out. As they take out of that, income tax. Now, here's the problem. The good news is if they stretch out that IRA, meaning only take out the minimum distribution, I'm referring to the beneficiaries of your retirement account, if they only take out that minimum amount that they're required to take out each year, that IRA is growing on a tax-deferred basis because at the younger years of the beneficiary, the minimum amount that has to come out is probably less than the growth, especially over a period of time.
Absolutely.
And so it keeps growing and growing, tax-deferred. You have compound interest in there, very powerful. 50-year-old inherits $200,000 and just takes out the minimum distributions, lives to age 80, that $200,000 will have become about $700,000 in distributions with still $200,000 to $300,000 left. That's just from a $200,000 IRA. You have a 13-year-old, you're in the millions of how much that beneficiary will receive. Now the problem.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, Mark, how many people do that?
Yeah, so you leave your children, and I don't care if they're adult children, I don't care what the situation is, if you leave that directly to them, they are not required to stretch it out. There's a minimum amount they're required, but there's no maximum. They could take it all out the next day after you die. 85% of beneficiaries within 9 months, guess what they do? It's gone. Because they didn't earn that money. It's a lottery.
That's an IRS statistic too, isn't it?
It is. And it's just like a lottery winning. You probably know somebody or heard stories of somebody that won the lottery and the money's blown. What I see happen many times, going back to the first thing, Murray, that you said was the son-in-law. Son-in-law is a nice guy, but he didn't see the sacrifice that you had. Not a horror story type of situation that there's a bad marriage, but he didn't see the sacrifice. He's looking, wow, we're getting this chunk of money. That looks like a 45-foot boat to me. And he convinces your daughter to withdraw those funds immediately. Well, we can draft estate planning documents and coordinate that with the financial planning to make sure that your children are getting that income stream. You're creating a pension for them. And it could be children, grandchildren, niece, nephew, anybody you want. And here's the other thing, creditor protection. Your IRA is protected from your creditors. Your IRA protected from your creditors. Same thing with a 401k. When you die and it becomes an inherited IRA to your children or grandchildren or whoever it may be, that creditor protection is off, no longer exists. So even if that child of yours decides, yeah, I like this stretch out thing, I'm going to keep doing that, divorce happens, lawsuit happens, goodbye money. Somebody else is getting your money. Using trust planning, we can turn that creditor protection back on. And we really agree heavily on making sure that that happens with your estate plan and your financial planning to make sure it's coordinated, that your retirement accounts are going to the people that you want them to go, not going to a third party.
So to second that, just to give you a perspective, we have about 700 clients. About 70% of our clients, we've chosen to make sure that those assets are protected for their kids and grandchildren by setting up something called a retirement trust to assure that stretch out, to protect it from divorce, creditor, and it's just segregating the assets. You have your regular revocable living trust for all your other assets, and then something called a retirement trust, that has special language Mark can talk about, for the IRAs. To assure that it's stretched out, it's protected, whatever's happening in your children's life, it'll be protected for their lifetime. 70% of our clients choose to do that.
By the way, if anybody has a question, just raise your hand. We'll get a microphone over to you. We have a question right here. Sure. Hold that thought, guys. We'll come back.
I was just wondering, you mentioned the book and the class. Do you have a website or contact information where it's available?
So we actually brought a scholarship to hand out to everyone, anyone who wants to attend. So if you see me before we leave, I'll give you a scholarship. It waives the $29 tuition, and you can go to retirementplanningedu.com, retirementplanningedu.com. You'll see all the classes. You'll be able to check out the syllabus. You'll learn more about the instructors, which is myself, Mark, and my brother, Dr. Mettler. And you can see where we're teaching.
While he mentions that he's going to throw that in, also throwing into the mix, Mark has been gracious enough to say anybody who would like to meet him in his office for free, he'll talk to you and give you a consultation. No obligation.
Yeah, no, definitely, Murray.
Yeah, answer your questions and get you on the right track for the future, and then you're on your own. You can do whatever you want.
And if you haven't done any planning or you have some planning that you want me to just take a second look at, and I'm happy to do that. On the way out, you'll see some folders of mine. You can grab it. It has my contact information, and there's some articles in there, too, about some of the things that we're talking about today.
Murray, we do not. Our process is a little different. We won't meet anyone unless they attend a full session of our class. When we help a client, we're going to spend 20 to 40 hours to build their plan. I can only work with about 40% of the people that want our help. So one of the requirements is they attend a seven-hour course so they're prepared for the type of planning we're going to try to introduce them to.
And then, of course, the course is free.
Well, for the audience today, it's free. It's regular $29.
Just a little negotiating for you.
Yes.
$29 that goes to charity.
It does go to charity.
Okay, enough of that stuff. So I love my daughter and I love my son-in-law, and they're great, and I want both of their names on everything because I love them both.
Please don't do that.
That's a big mistake. So let me give you an example. Murray puts his daughter's name on the property, on his home. Why would he do that? What's the reason that he's doing that?
Avoid probate. Right.
Avoiding probate. So if something happens to Murray, that house, that real estate is not tied up in probate court. It's just automatically going to his daughter. Problem is, once you add somebody to the deed, they have ownership. Now, his daughter is sued, lawsuit, divorce, or whatever it may be. Hate to do this to your daughter. She's not even here, right, to protect herself. But now that property is subject to whatever's going on in her life. And I see people do that all the time. They add children to the bank accounts, to the investment accounts. There was a case in Michigan not that long ago that was made the newspapers and everything, where there was a woman, she was a widow. She added her oldest son to the accounts, who was going to do the right thing. All of a sudden, her checks started bouncing. She goes to the bank. Well, what happened was her son was a deadbeat dad. State of Michigan found the money, and they went after it. That's a bad outcome. Using trust planning, we can avoid all those reasons that people add their children or somebody else to the investment accounts, to the real estate, or whatever it may be.
Mark, can I add one thing? I think we keep talking about estate planning as if something you only need when you die. And it's really about also while you're living. It's all the ancillary documents, the financial powers attorneys. There's so many people that are confused about this idea. If my spouse all of a sudden becomes incapacitated, has a stroke, closed head injury, dementia, Alzheimer's, that somehow you as a spouse have access to your spouse's IRAs and their accounts, and you don't. That would require some sort of power of attorney documents, and if not that, then you have to go to probate, right?
Yeah, what would happen is, anybody heard the term conservatorship? Yeah. So if you lack capacity and you haven't done any planning, and there's an account in just your name or some sort of financial decision that needs to happen, nobody automatically has that power. Spouse doesn't have it, children don't have it, there isn't a defined person under the law. What does happen is those people, whoever needs to take over, typically if there is a spouse, that's who, would have to go to court and establish a conservatorship. That is a lengthy expensive process that brings you back every year having to file court papers. And sometimes what the judges do will require a bond, what's called a surety bond, over those accounts to make sure whoever's appointed as the conservator that they're not blowing the money. And there's been some, I forgot which one of the papers, but they did a whole study on the conservatorships, and they found all this money that was blown, that the conservators were taking the money, using it for themselves. So they're very concerned. The judges are concerned of just allowing someone to take over, and they make you get these bonds, $3,000 a year. I mean, they're really expensive. So a better answer is you have a power of attorney document in place that says, if I lack capacity, here's who the decision maker is.
Questions?
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, if you have them, just raise your hand and we will stop and get to you. We have one right there. Yes.
She had nothing done, correct? So ultimately, you know, what would
there are stories that Aretha Franklin was unprotected, so to speak.
And I think Prince also
were unprotected.
So, you know, in those cases, what ended up happening?
That's a great question. So why do you always hear about these celebrity estates? Why do we find out so much information? And the reason is just what was just said, is that there was nothing. They didn't do the planning, which means they ended up in probate court. Well, the first thing that happens when a probate estate is opened is a publication happens, and it's an ad that goes in the legal news. So whoever wants to be the personal representative, that's the Michigan's way of saying executor, files a petition. At the same time, right next to the probate counter is the legal news, and an ad goes in the legal news. And now everyone knows that there's this public process. And you can go to the probate court and see what has been opened. That's why we find out this information. If instead Aretha had a trust and everything was handled through the trust, no one other than her trustee, her lawyer, or whoever in the probably the beneficiaries would have any idea what was happening in with her estate.
Just a couple of weeks ago, I was mentioning on the air that there was a study, a study that was done among attorneys like yourself and CPAs. What is the biggest threat to family wealth? And they said the family, because people aren't prepared, and the family gets into squabbles over that. Let me go through a couple of things real quickly here, because what we're talking about here is financial fitness and financial success. And how do you find financial success? And wait, we have a question here?
Yep. Yes.
I'll hold that.
Good morning.
Go right ahead.
I know you touched a little bit earlier on the new tax laws, and then and of course the new tax laws also affect estate planning as well. But to my understanding, those laws, or at least the definitive details of those laws, have not even been released yet. I don't know if they're necessarily even written, but at this point they haven't been released yet. How are you providing the understanding, the access, and advisement to your clients, knowing that, you know, there's this thing in place, but you don't have all the details to share with them, you know, how it could best benefit your clients?
Yeah, so and I think we can both kind of jump on this question. The estate tax, we know what the estate tax is. You know, that number's locked in. That's not something we're waiting for word from under the new tax law. So we're real solid on the estate tax and the gift tax laws. There is some questions on some of the income tax rules that the CPAs are waiting on.
199.
And so that's some of the issues that it's not going to affect so much the planning on what I do, although there are some things that could come up, but I don't think it's going to have an effect on what I do. It may have an effect more on Kirk's side when we're looking at the income.
And I'd also point out with the estate tax, while it's $11 million today, it's likely going to change again, right? So it's hard to – it's a moving number. So, you know, I think –
Well, it's a moving number, but the number is set right now.
Right now.
Because we never know what Congress, what the legislature is going to change.
What party will be in control?
It all depends, and I'm not making a political statement at all. It just depends on who's in control and what their goals are from an estate tax. And it becomes, you know, the estate tax becomes a real political issue more than anything. Historically, and I know I'm going on a little tangent for you, but historically the estate tax has been a loser for the government, meaning that they hire more people, the costs for collection are more than they take in. Because every estate tax return, unlike a 1040, every estate tax return is audited. So there's a lot and a lot of real complicated issues, more so than on a 1040. I think where the government's going to look is, well, now we're in this huge transition of wealth as the baby boomers are passing away, that maybe this is the opportunity to actually win on the estate tax side from a business standpoint. So I could see a change.
And, I would argue, again, this isn't a political statement, but look, we're hired for the higher net worth hire us to help us avoid some of those state tax liabilities, right? We have a $55 million client right now who, if they die today, is going to pay somewhere between $11 and $13 million in estate taxes. I should be able to, with the help of Mark and CPAs, significantly reduce that by repositioning assets, putting them in family LLCs, using charitable strategies and charitable trust. That's why all the wealthy have family foundations and charitable trust. There's a
business
owners. Yeah, and business owners, right? And particularly with the new 199 deduction, the 20% pass-through entities, there's a lot of planning to be had there, right? Those are some of the details that we're not totally clear about. And what's amazing right now is we still don't have an effective 1040 that is approved. We have a draft, which is, by the way, now 8 pages. It's not just the postcard. It's now 8 pages. But we do not have an official 1040 yet to be able to draft and do some of our planning with. We have a pretty good idea what it's going to be and what it's going to look like, but there's definitely some outstanding questions we're waiting on.
And, you know, keep in mind, too, if any of you are business owners, you have to do the estate planning for the business. So, yes, you want your personal planning, but you want to take the time to do that estate planning. We call it succession planning. You may have heard the term buy-sell agreements. You want to make sure that upon your death that your business does not, number one, get tied up in probate, and number two, that there's liquidity, that we don't want a situation that there's estate tax that has to get paid from that business, and now what do? Does it get sold at pennies on the dollar? Because the government, if there is an estate tax, is going to want their money.
Mark, that's a big mistake we see a lot. Business owners just not doing proper succession planning, estate planning. And I think it also, the same reason why a lot of you don't have your trust yet, because you're still young, you have time, not thinking about the potential bad things that can happen to us. It's not just going to happen to the others. It can happen to us.
And think, too.
We're 60, right? I mean, we're getting up there.
Well, you're 60.
I'm not 60, but I'm
so
close.
But if there's a family business, typically not all the children are in that business, but many times, probably most times, at least one is. Well, when the parents pass away, who gets the business? Is it go to the one that's in the business, or does it go to all the children? And if it goes to the one that's in the business, is that, you know, does that make up the majority of the estate? Is that fair? Is it fair if the others that are not in the business now have a piece of the action? I mean, there's not an answer to that. Those are the things that have to come out in these discussions.
I'm sure those will be contested.
And I mean, that's opening up the doors for lawsuits and a contested trust or estate when a death occurs. But you want to make sure that you get everything in writing of what you want to happen. Don't leave it to the next generation. Most businesses don't survive the next generation. And I would say the number one reason is that there was not proper planning. Planning makes up a lot of things, making sure that there's a succession in place in terms of talking through not only with the child or children that are in the business, you know, what is your role going to be? When am I going to step out? But also when the death occurs or a disability occurs, who's in charge? How does that all work?
I want to just ask a couple of things. We talk about financial success, and a financial survey found they took a look at people from their 30s through their 80s, and they asked them, from your experience, what are you worried about most? What's most important? Let me throw these out and get quick comments from you. Number one, they said, was to be prepared, that you always have to be prepared, that that's part of any financial fitness program that you have. Preparation. You have a statistic, Kirk, about what can happen.
Well, there's a lot of statistics there, right? You know, only you should be prepared, but only 4% of you actually have a written plan for retirement, which is remarkable. And there's also a lot of misconceptions, Murray, about how much you're going to need in retirement. For some reason, we believe we're going to be able to live on 78% of our income. I know where it comes from. There's a study that was done that says that's about what you'll want in retirement, is 78% of your income. But that same study, 35% of the people got 90% of their income from Social Security only. So it skews the data. So if you have saved money for resources, our experience, you know, our average client's net worth is about $1.5 million. So our experience, the people who are attending our classes, they've saved, they have resources, and they're going to want the same similar lifestyle they had, the same type of income in retirement than they had when they were working before they retired. So I think there's just a lot of misconceptions out there that people need to get better clarity and better preparation for.
And being prepared means what could happen that you don't expect to happen.
Yeah, the unexpected expense every 3.2 years, the disability, the incapacitation.
Every 3.2 years.
Yeah. Every 3.2 years, you'll have an unexpected expense. Okay, 700 of our, this is based upon 700 clients. We track all the data. And every 3.2 years, our clients have an unexpected expense that they didn't budget for.
But so, of course, if they're your clients, they're all set, right?
Well, they are, because they don't know, but in their plan, we have either a Roth or a tax-favorable account that we can dip into every 3.2 years that isn't going to impact our long-term 30-year plan.
Diversity, diversity, diversity was number two on the list. You have to, you can't be all in one thing.
So diversification is a funny thing. I know when we first meet people, they often say, you know, one of our questions is, how diversified are you? And inevitably, the one spouse will say, well, I have a old 401k from my previous employer, and I have my current 403b, and I have a brokerage account with Edward Jones, and I also have some at TD, and I do a little bit here, and the other spouse has a 401k. We own 30 different mutual funds. We're highly diversified. Well, if you look at those 30 different mutual funds, look at the top 10 holdings, they're going to be pretty similar. So you may be diversified by name, but you're technically highly correlated, meaning many of your investments are going to perform similar in similar market conditions. And diversification would have some investments maybe not performing as well when the market's going up, but when the market's going down, might be performing better, right? So that's one of the transitions we have to think about once we go from accumulating our wealth to preserving and distributing our wealth, is trying to hit those singles and doubles. Reduce the volatility by being more diversified, being less correlated.
And there's something about an X-ray. Software programs where financial professionals can X-ray what you have, and they can look at all of your mutual funds and find out that you've got this much General Motors when you thought you only had this much, because of what you just suggested, is if you're taking the top 10 mutual funds for large mutual fund holdings, they're probably the same kinds of companies, or the very same companies with maybe a different mix. But it all adds up in yours. You see General Motors stock dropped a ton one day, and you say, well, I'm glad I don't have too much of that. Well, you do.
You do.
You just don't realize it because it's in all those mutual funds. I said
Apple.
General Motors, it could be any company right there. Move along real quickly. Risky business for people who are young. There's really a reason to be a little risky.
So here's what I tell my clients' children, right? Our clients are ages 50 to 97, 700 of them between the ages of 50 and 97. So a lot of our clients want us to help their children. I do it. I don't charge them a fee, because quite honestly, if you're young, you're still just accumulating wealth. Just buy, if you're in your 401ks, just buy the index funds. Don't look at a statement for 5 to 10 years. Don't even pay attention to it. Just buy the index funds, buy the S&P, buy the NASDAQ, buy the Russell 2000. If they offer you ETFs in your 401k, it's great. But stick with the indexes. They're going to be the least expensive. And over the last 30 years, the S&P 500 has performed at 10%. So just leave it alone. Don't let market volatility bother you if you're young. You don't need to hire a financial advisor to help you do that. Do it yourself. Save the money.
A study of the S&P 500 by J.P. Morgan over a 20-year period found if you leave $10,000 invested fully in the S&P 500 for two decades, you would have earned 7.2%. You would have had a return of over $40,000. If you miss just the best 10 days, your return and growth drops by half.
Market
3.5%. $20,000. That's only the best 10 days in 20 years.
Exactly.
So the point about investing and not necessarily marrying it and keeping it forever, but not getting in and out.
Murray, is a biased, in the research supports my bias, is that I'm not a big believer in active management. I think passive, buying an index, buying and holding over the long period is going to win. I do believe as we get a little bit older and we start entering into the distribution phase, active management can be utilized and beneficial not to beat the market, but to prevent wealth devastation. So active management can prevent the big volatility swings, but when we're young, it's silly to try to actively manage in time because you're going to lose, as Murray says, 10 days.
And a young person who says, well, I'm going to buy a house, so I'm going to take money from my 401k. I had a call from a young person in his 30s, and he said, my company has this program where I can tap my 401k, and they can kind of compensate me a little bit and all this stuff. Two reasons not to do that.
Well, I think we need to just... you need to be disciplined and leave your retirement alone. I think people struggle to recognize how much money you really have to save to be able to live the lifestyle you've grown accustomed to. So, look, I understand financially there are some advantages to taking a loan against your 401k. My experience is people make mistakes. They don't pay it back. They put themselves in a hole. They find ways to rationalize and justify spending or using this. Just save money, live within your means, budget, plan, and you're going to be okay. Just be disciplined and quit using things to rationalize why you should buy something.
Any questions before we wrap this up?
Can I add one thing about Mark?
Yes, of course.
Because another misconception we see a lot in our classes is having a will. For some reason, people think a will is an estate plan that's going to help you avoid probate. Can you talk, Mark, a little bit about a will only and why most people need more than just a will at this point?
Sure. So I had mentioned before, if you do no planning and you have an asset that's in your name, you end up in probate court upon death. But now let's say you still have that same asset that is just in your name, but you've taken a step and you have that will. You still end up in probate court because we have to prove that will is the correct will. And this is where you've heard stories where people have contested the will and they show up with another will. We don't know that the will that somebody is petitioning the court with is the correct will. So we have to go through the exact same process if you have a will or you don't have a will. The process is exactly the same. The outcome is different just because the estate plan is either decided by the government, meaning you died without a will, or it's decided by you with a will. The better answer is have a trust, and that avoids the probate issue. You know, the one other thing, too, when you think of working with an advisor, I think that this is really an important thing. As you get older, elder law abuse, elder law financial abuse. If you are working with someone and now somebody is, let's say you're working with Kirk, and now one of your children or a caregiver is now trying to get a hold of your money, and this happens regularly, it's not going to happen. Okay, it won't happen because he's not going to allow it to happen because everything is going to go through him. He's going to make sure that doesn't occur. We just had a situation with a client. She's 93 years old, something like that. And her son is the trustee, and her son was withdrawing funds. I got a call from Kirk and said, you know, I'm a little concerned about this. We set up a family meeting with the lady that's 92, and she's still competent, but she didn't want to handle some of the things, and the son and the other children. And it turned out it was good news. It was all legitimate stuff. But we're on top of that. If if there's no plan in place or there's not an advisor that you're working with that is able to watch that, much easier for that money to go out the door. I had a situation in the office. I got a call from a lawyer out of Chicago. His client's father was here. Well, very wealthy family, owned a lot of real estate. Father was in his 90s, could tell you every piece of real estate, how it cash flowed, everything. But he also was convinced that he won the Jamaican lottery. And he was going to the bank on an almost daily basis and wiring money, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. By the time the children realized it, $500,000 went to whoever it's going to. If there would have been a team in place and that dad had a financial advisor, wasn't just sitting this large sum of money sitting at the bank, then that wouldn't have happened. So you want to make sure that you get that team, not only the people you're working with, but your family. So there's a structure to everything.
Yeah, that's one of our requirements, is to sit down with the entire family and at least conceptually explain that there's a plan. We're here. We're helping to execute it. Sometimes our clients want us to go into details. Sometimes they don't. But at least there's an introduction. We meet every 3 years with the entire family. If they're out of state, we'll share screen with them, conference them in. But we want the family to know if something's going on, we're here to protect the parents.
By the way, the figure is $36 billion. That's how much seniors in America lost last year because people ripped them off. Sometimes it was people that they got on the telephone. Sometimes it was bad brokers. Sometimes it was family members, caregivers. The list goes on and on. Please just give me three things, Mark, that I should do when I get home.
When you get home?
When I get home. When I get home, give me three things that I should be thinking about, looking at, writing down on a piece of paper, an action list.
Yes, yeah, so I would say so. Three things. Number one is if you have an estate plan, pull it out and look at it. It's probably been a number of years since you've done that, and I'll bet you'd be surprised of what's in there. Number two, look at your assets and think, how is everything titled? And this is if you have an estate plan or you haven't done anything. So if you die or you become disabled, what is going to happen? And I bet you'll be surprised at what you see. And the third thing is, going back to what I just said, is make sure that you have your family knows of your team. And what Kirk said is real important, you know, that he likes to meet with the family. I do the same thing in my office. And even if there's a trustee or a personal representative that's not within the family, we schedule a meeting, make sure that everyone understands what is supposed to happen. Going back to that first thing I said to you, implementation.
Three things, Kirk.
Three things.
Narrow it down to three things. I can only do three things. I can only do six things tonight when I get home. He's just giving me three. Give me three more.
So first, hug your wife and kids, right? Appreciate them. And this may sound self-serving, but honestly, go to retirementplanning.edu and go to the class. You will be better prepared for what you're about to enter. You're gonna hear the things that that our industry may not always want you to hear. I would look at the investments you have to see how similar the top 10 holdings are to try to increase your diversification. I would echo Mark. I think beneficiaries aren't critical. That's a huge mistake we're seeing every day. People don't have the right beneficiaries and titling on their accounts. That's a big one.
And don't forget, somebody needs to know where all of this information is if you're not around to let them know, number one. And number two, a lot of it now is digital. How many people have passwords? Don't share your passwords. Well, you better share it with somebody, and maybe there's a place in a trust for passwords so that somebody knows how to get to all of your stuff.
You know, the digital assets, it's a mess, and there's not a perfect answer for it. And the reason, you know, I tell clients, make sure that you have a list of the accounts, the passwords, whether it's social media, your email. The email a lot of times is the most important because we all get our statements now digitally. Well, when there's a death occurs and we're trying to figure out what's there, the best place to look is the statements. Well, now no one can get those. The problem you have is, you know, like my dad, he's got this little piece of paper and you see the passwords crossed out you know, it's just no matter how many times, you know, fortunately, and I have a 17-year-old that he's in charge of grandpa's passwords. But you have to make sure that it's when you do change it, that it's written down on that form. You know, there's things like with social media that they're putting together, the different companies of how to transfer it. But the email is not easy. It's you have to have that written down somewhere.
Mark, I would also add, at least from an investment financial perspective, there's software out there. We provide, we call it a wealth portal, but it's just a data aggregating software that takes all of your investments, your 401ks, your money that's at Fidelity, your money, your bank accounts, and it aggregates it all to one location. So you have one login and all your investments are shown in one location. So there's less passwords to keep track of. If it's all aggregated together.
All right. Kirk Cassidy, Mark Wunder, thank you so much for being with us today, for your expertise, for your gracious offer of free help for people. And don't forget to pick up the printed material that's out there that both of you have left on your own.
Thanks,
thank
everyone.
Thank you both very, very much.
Thanks,
LTU, thank you so much for hosting us again.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.